Good afternoon. We will begin with a little meditation, as usual. Can we have some music, Arun? Letting go, letting go of all thoughts of this physical existence, I turn my attention inwards. Separating myself from the external world of activities, responsibilities, I go deep within to the center of my existence. I feel the spiritual energy flowing within this physical body, and I feel it getting concentrated. In the center of the brain, as though my entire existence is merging, converging into a point. A point. That energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. My original and eternal existence of life. The soul, the spirit, I experience myself as this sparkling star, it is as though this physical body and this physical world has disappeared from my consciousness. And all that remains is the spirit. to the deep silence of the spirit. Absolute stillness. My entire existence concentrated into a point. I am a sparkling star. I am the eternal spirit. Stabilized in this experience of my eternal self, I go beyond this physical world of matter. And I see myself in that spiritual world of light. The land of silence. And once again I see myself in the presence of the Supreme. In the presence of God. Shining down upon me. The ocean of light. A point, source. Of infinite peace. Unlimited purity. I experience myself to be completely merged in this light, in the light of the Supreme. In the light of God. His light flowing into me. Cleansing. Purifying. Filling the soul with deep spiritual strength. Filling the soul with the power of silence. Deep contentment. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. I experience the state. desire. Lost in the experience of fullness. Pure consciousness. I, the soul, in the presence of the Supreme. Two sparks of infinity. Holding on to this light and this deep silence. I allow myself to gently return back to this physical world, back to this body. And once again, I take my place in the center of the brain. I, the eternal spirit, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, spreading the light of life throughout the brain. At peace with myself, at peace with the world, Good afternoon, good evening. What do we say, good afternoon or good evening? It's too dark for the afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon? Good afternoon.
Yes.
Okay, good afternoon. So what happens when the sun sets at 11 o'clock? Still say good afternoon at 10 o'clock? Yes. Today our subject will be equality. This month we have been looking at the self and society. And so we've been looking at how do we experience ourselves in the social world around us, how we shape it, how we are shaped by it. In the previous session we looked at the concept of freedom and responsibility, and how dynamics of identity influence the way we exercise our freedom. Because sometimes the way we exercise our freedom, we call it freedom, but we might only be asserting our identity in an arrogant way. And we take responsibility for our actions, but sometimes the responsibility is only a very deep dependence on our personal or social identity. We spoke of identity in two forms. One is the shaping of our personal identity, how I see myself as an individual, the shaping of my skills, my competencies, my personal values, my personal likes, dislikes, And then we spoke about our social identity, the way we identify ourselves as members of the society, members of social groups, religion, ethnicity, language, culture, professional groups, associations, occupational groups, clubs, societies like that. Today we will look at the dynamics of identity again, but we will try and relate it to the experience of equality and also the experience of superiority and inferiority. So in the world nowadays, there is so much of talk on equality, right? All over the world you go, there is so much of talk on equality. How do we create a world of equality? This has been a concern for a very long time. Many philosophies, many political, economic systems were launched to create a world of equality. Marxian socialism was launched to create a world of equality, right? Communism came from that to create a world of equality. So many people have tried it in their own ways. And so we try and create a world of equality. One way we look at equality is the distribution of wealth in society. So many people speak about having a society where there is a more equitable distribution of wealth. There is not such a big difference between the poor and the rich. Can we ever achieve an equitable distribution of wealth? Is it possible? What do you think? Equal distribution. Absolutely equal distribution of wealth. Good idea, right? Can we do that?
No.
What do you think? It's
no.
Really tough, huh? Almost impossible, people would say. Some would say, yes, ideally. That's what communism tried to do. But eventually what happens, there is still a difference. Some people are running the country, some people are not. They try. They're still trying in some places. And so in some countries in the world, you have a lesser difference between the rich and the poor, like Scandinavia, like Denmark, for example. The lowest difference you could probably see in the world, in the Scandinavian countries, between the rich and the poor. More equitable distribution of wealth. In other countries, there is a wider difference. You can clearly see the difference. And various strata in society. And a very big difference between the very rich and the very poor. Countries like India, for example. So you have such distribution of wealth. People try and reduce it. Sometimes it's possible to some extent. In some circumstances, it's not possible. Especially where you have large populations. Then people speak about equality in gender. Male and female. Equal opportunities for people of both gender, male and female. And so people try and protect these rights by various laws, politicking, looking at employment laws, for example, looking at various forms of ways in which people can discriminate between gender. We try and remove that, try and maintain equality, so we treat the gender equally. Are men and women equal? What do you say?
Yeah.
Yes? No? Some say yes, some say no. In what way are they equal? In what way are they not equal?
But can it be equal but different?
Very interesting question. What do you think?
Yes.
You can be equal and yet different. In some ways there will never be equality, right? In some ways there will never be equality. But generally speaking, when people speak about equality in society, there's, I think, generally they're speaking about the lack of discrimination, for example. They should be given equal opportunities. So people speak about equal opportunities. Everybody should get equal opportunities. And then, of course, then people do what they can do. So people speak about gender equality, racial equality. People speak about the treatment of various religions as the same. So people try and create a world of equality. We even speak about equality given even to, say, criminals, known criminals, who we know have committed acts which have been very, very violent. We would still like them to have the same rights as anyone else. Right? So, for example, a person, like in Norway, we had some very bad, not a very good incident last year, right? The massacre of these young people. In spite of all that, we give that person so much rights, so many rights. Should get the defense, get the right trial, you know, total fairness. We try and create a lot of equality in the world around us. So this is one way of looking at equality. Externally, we try and create equality in terms of distribution of wealth, in terms of the rights, legal rights that people have, for example, in terms of gender equality, etc., etc., etc. We try. We speak a lot about it in the world today. However, underlying this dialogue of equality that we see in the world, superficially we see it very clearly. Do we experience equality deep inside? As you said very nicely, we can be different, but can we be equal? Do we experience equality in the differences that we see around us inside us, do we? Do we genuinely really feel? Feel. We can speak many things. Do we feel this person of a different color is equal to me? This person of a different religion is equal to me? This person of a different gender is equal to me? This person of a different sexual orientation is equal to me? Do we feel that? We honestly ask ourselves, how much and how deeply do we really feel that? And how do we know in society that these deep experiences of equality are not really there? How do we know that? Any thoughts? Are they there, first of all? Certainly, in some of us they might be there. But generally speaking, when we look at society as such, are they really there? The sense of equality, we are different, but we all say that. Of course, we can be different, but we are the same. You know, you're allowed to be different. Very often it takes a very condescending approach. Oh, you're different. No, I have no problems. You're just different. Oh, no, they're okay. They just have different values. We are different, they're different. Yes, you were saying something?
It could be there, but sometimes if you are different from the other because of your hair color, so you can by yourself feel that maybe there is something they're thinking about me that she's from another.
Very interesting. Sometimes we experience that. That it is not, it might not really be there, but we experience there is a discrimination. That can
or
very.
Discrimination sounds very hard, but sort of thinking that, okay.
Let us be brave and look at hard words today. Let's be brave and look at hard words. Why shy away from hard words? We see that in the world. I remember a friend of mine, she works at a clinic somewhere. And so once we had the experience that there were some people, some who had come down there, some people who were not from Denmark, who had come from another country, and they were waiting in the line for a long time. And there was a big line, and she was trying to adjust it and try to make sure that people got to see the doctor. In some time, this person, one of the people there, he got very upset. And then he came and he started speaking to her and he said, you know, when will I get my chance? And she said, well, you know, there's a long line. And then he says, yeah, I know why you're doing this. You're keeping me waiting because I'm not from Denmark. I'm from another country. He felt that. He felt discriminated. From her perspective, that wasn't really so. That didn't really happen. She just, you know, she was trying to sort it out. But you're right, that can sometimes happen. That may not actually be there, but I feel it. But in some situations, it is actually there. In some situations, it is actually there. There are studies by sociologists and psychologists which reveal quite clearly that, for example, when people apply applications, people are called, it's statistically proven, right? People are called based on their names. We know that. Such things happen. When people see a photograph of an attractive person versus another one who's not so attractive, they are more likely to call the person who is more attractive. There are also researchers that have revealed that. They are more likely to hire people who look good, given the same level of qualification. They are more likely to hire a person who looks better than the other. There are studies that reveal that. So at some level, there is discrimination in society. We practice it. Very often, it's at a subconscious level. And therefore, it can perhaps be a lot more dangerous. In some cases, it is quite obvious. It's out there. People say, they very openly claim that, yes, okay, this is right, this is wrong, and we will select these people, we will not select these people. They're very honest and open about it. Such people are called fanatics, fundamentalists, extremists. They're being honest about it. Others, they say, oh, no, everything is okay, but at a certain level, there is an experience that is happening inside. So, as you said, we may not always speak about superiority or inferiority. But we do speak about quite often in our discourse, we speak about this is better. These people are better, these ways of doing things are better. They are, well, worse or maybe not so good, not better. Worse is also a very strong word, so you could say not so good. Okay, not so good. So we speak about
what is, this is right, this looks right. This does not look so right. Right? Not wrong. It's okay, it's different.
I prefer this to that, right?
We, of course, don't always speak about superiority and inferiority. Of course, it is not politically correct to speak about superiority and inferiority all the time. Yeah? But some experiences are there.
I had a very interesting, many experiences like that, but one interesting experience, a couple of them I think I would like to share with you. One was many years ago, I was teaching in another country, and we had some foreign exchange students. And in these foreign exchange students, I used to have quite a few students from Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka at that time was going through some difficulties because of the conflict between the Tamils and the local Sinhalese. So a large part of the country, you had a Tamil population, and of course, then a large part of the country, you had the local Sinhalese population. And there was a very strong conflict between them, very violent conflict between them. Both sides had their own points of view. So this boy was from Sri Lanka, very spiritual, you know, he would practice meditation, and he would, you know, do a lot of social service, sort of social work, going out there and helping people, even helping people in the Tamil community. He was not Tamil, he was Sinhalese, from the local Sri Lankan side, but helping the Tamil community, helping various people and all that. And he had a very deep reflection, a process of reflection. And, you know, we were speaking about many of these things one day, and he said, you know, I discovered something very, very, very dangerous within myself. I said, what was that? He said, you know, earlier it used to happen, but I'd never pay attention to it. But the other, because we were speaking about these things, he said, the other day I paid attention to it. And I discovered there is a major problem within me that I need to sort out. I said, what happened? He said, I was hearing the news. And on the news they were saying that so many Tamil people in Sri Lanka, they were killed because of the violence, severe violence going, so many were killed. And my first thought, which I did not want to really accept, was, well, there were Tamils that were killed, not Sinhalese. And there was a sigh of relief. And he got that. See, it's painful to look at that within yourself. He got that. He got that and he said, why am I feeling relief? Because the Sinhalese were not killed. The Tamil people were killed and the Sinhalese were not killed. Because I am Sinhalese. So in spite of all these things that he was doing outside, that deep inner experience, identity. We deserve to live more than they. Very painful realization, right? We are better than they. We have more rights to live than they. So if they die, it's okay. If we die, it's not so good. He realized it. Then he started working on this whole issue. Again, we come back to this old understanding of identity. Because through this identity, we experience a sense of self-worth, we also experience a sense of security. I have grown up with this. This has become the anchor of my security and self-worth. And though it is not me out there, it is by extension me out there, because as we had discussed earlier in the previous session, we spoke of these two aspects of identity, the personal and the social. And both are, of course, coexisting within me. I am me, but I am also us. I am a part of the social group with which I have identified. The social group that has protected me. The social group that has rewarded me. And this social group, because of being a member of the social group, I have been given regard by others. When I expressed my affiliation to this social group, I was protected by others. I was given opportunities by others in various ways to demonstrate myself. It becomes a very deep part of me. And so, externally, I try a lot to do many things, many things, many things. helping these people, but deep inside the division of us and them is there. Recently there was another experience that I had. This was here in Copenhagen. Recently, if you remember, there was this attack in Libya on the American consulate in Benghazi. And four American officials were killed. And there was, of course, a lot of news around about that all over the world, of how these four people were killed, and a terrible thing happened. Well, a terrible thing to happen, four people who haven't really gone around doing anything nasty that we know of, they're just killed like that. There was an uproar, very valid, very justified. A couple of days after that, there was a bombing in Afghanistan, which keeps happening quite frequently. And about 7 to 8 women were killed. And I have a few Afghan friends here in Copenhagen. I was speaking to a couple of them. They were very, very angry. I said, "Why are you? What happened?" He said, "Look at the news. Four Americans were killed. It's all over the news. These 8 Afghan women were killed who'd done nothing. They went out into the forest to do something. 8 of them were killed. It is just one subtitle, one little headline, and that's it. It's gone. What does this communicate? That the Americans deserve to live more than the Afghans? And because they are Afghans, they feel it very deeply, right? That means we don't have a right to live. 7 innocent women have been killed. How come that's not a big issue? When these 4 men have been killed, it's such a big issue. So the way the media approaches events, that also reveals something about society. What is happening in the depth of society? We speak about protecting rights and everything. What happens here? Oh, the casualties of war. Justified targets, because in a war, people die. And so deep divisions exist in society, all around us. We try and sort of deal with it. But are we trying deep enough? At a superficial level, we deal with it. But are we trying deep enough? And what is happening inside the human soul? We want to have equality. There is no question about that. We strive for equality. I mean, look at what happened in the world. We had this First World War, a lot of destruction in Europe. And after that, the leaders of the powerful nations of the world got together and they said, we cannot afford to have another war like this. And they formed the League of Nations. So they tried. It's not that they haven't tried. They tried sincerely. We cannot afford to have a war like this. They formed the League of Nations. You had the Second World War. After the Second World War, they all came together and said, no, we cannot afford to have another war like this. They formed the United Nations. How much has it succeeded? We're having wars all over the place. It's not that humanity is not trying. They are trying. In some cases, they are trying desperately. And yet, these things keep happening. And yet, these divisions of, I am better than you, and therefore I deserve to live more than you. I can exploit you for my benefit. You don't have any right to exploit me for your benefit, but I have a right to exploit you for my benefit, because I am better. I am just a superior person. And this has been there in history for a very, very long time. These divisions exist in all countries. It's not just about Christians versus Muslims or East against. It's there in all countries. In India, for example, where I was born and brought up, it's such a diverse culture, such a diverse country. This is one India, but it's so complicated. I don't know how many of you know, there are more than 50 languages. I'm not speaking about dialects, languages, script, grammar, everything, languages. 26 officially recognized languages, and many more that are spoken by 100,000 people, 1.2 billion people. So, you can have many, many languages, you have religions. Yeah. Even in a country like that, there are such deep divisions. I know of a state in the country. It's in the northeast part of the country. Politicians very clearly, very openly speak about these divisions and even say that we need these people to be out. They belong to that same state. They belong to the same country. They even belong to the same religion. But the caste is different, you see. So we can go deep into identity. It's not just language, religion, and country. It's also the caste. Some politicians from what is called the backward class, they're not necessarily the backward class, they're very powerful today, but at some point they were economically not privileged.
The Yadavs, for example, they are called. They used to be milkmen historically. And then you have the elite class, the Brahmins and the others. And politicians coming up and saying, these Brahmins have to be removed from the state. Same country, same religion, same state, same language. And yet, there are deep divisions. They need to be removed. And so what happens? You have the Maoist army, the Naxalites. Okay? They fight for the backward, so-called backward classes. So they have their militia and they go into these villages where you have the so-called forward class people, and there is violence there. And then the forward class people have formed their own militia. And so one night, this little militia comes into this village, creates havoc, kills a few people. The next night, the militia from that particular place goes to their village and creates havoc. Cleansing. Ethnic cleansing. Ethnicity. Ethnic cleansing has happened here in Europe also, right? People blame the Germans for that. It's not the Germans to be blamed. It's happened. It's not just because of Germany. It's not just what happened in Yugoslavia, Serbia, Bosnia. No. It's happened in India. It's happened in many, many places. This belief that my ethnicity, my social identity, whatever you want to call it, religion, class, caste, deserves to live more than you do. And therefore, I can engage in all sorts of practices to discriminate against you. It is justified and remove you from this world. You don't deserve to exist. I deserve to exist. Deep divisions are there. And so we speak about equality, but under the surface, this is what is happening. Sometimes it's outright, clear, obvious violence. Sometimes the violence is more subtle, more systemic. Like, for example, I will say everything about equality. I will even advertise that, you know, we encourage people of all backgrounds and religions and cultures and languages to apply. But when they apply, somehow at some level of my consciousness, I discriminate and I select based on the name, select based on the way they look, select based on many other things. So some level of discrimination is happening. At least if it is conscious, it is honest, it's out there. If it is not conscious, it's more dangerous. Because then I am under the control of it. I don't even know what I am doing. So what do we do? Why do these divisions happen in the first place? Why is it that humanity tries to create a world of equality and yet we end up in these discriminatory practices? Why does that happen? What do you think, Angela? Why does that happen? We want to do it, right? We want to do it. Everywhere in the world people speak about it, yes.
Doesn't it happen because we don't look at each other soul to soul? We look at each other identity.
100% right. We are looking at the identity. We are not looking at each other as spiritual beings. But why does that happen? Why are we? And we know, we sit and speak about the soul. We sit and speak. Even in spiritual organizations, you see that discrimination. People speak about soul all the time. They speak about God all the time. They speak about values all the time. And yet there is discrimination.
Well, it must be because we are not totally in harmony with our soul.
And why is that?
Maybe it's a kind of a group mentality. And we are like animals somehow. Like the lions and zebras. And it's a kind of group mentality.
Mm.
It's our animal instincts. I think, kind of.
But why does that? Why are we taken over by this? We understand, right? We understand this is not right. This is destructive for the human civilization. This is crazy. Doesn't make sense. We know that. And yet we are given into that instinct.
Survival instinct of ourselves.
But we know it won't help us in survival because if I go on killing others, they're going to kill me. I mean, there's no way. We know that rationally. We know that. Don't we? I go around killing and bombing people up. They will turn around and bomb me at some point. It's 100% guaranteed.
But yeah,
I cannot remove all of them.
But maybe we aren't that enlightened and spiritual. Maybe we are just still animals deep down in our brain.
You're right. Yeah. So what? We just go on like that? I'll come back to you. Yes?
I don't always think like it's a bad thing. Because if you see a person here and a person here, and you say, okay, who am I going to choose? And you say, okay, okay, he had really bad shoes, and something inside me, my instinct tell me not to go with him, so I will go here, and you can call him like, oh, you are, you know, like, why is that? And you know, but you have like an instinct to follow people you feel like energetic, attracted to. So it's not always bad, like, and why didn't you, you why didn't you pick that? It's like, it's a good thing to have an instinct to, like, to know people. Sometimes you don't know. Why don't you like him? I don't know. I don't like him.
And what happens?
Some other people may like him, but not me. We should not, we are not all one big, like, fitting in together.
Mm. But what happens when that instinct that you speak about, what happens when that instinct creates a world that is violent and discriminatory?
But I don't think that's the instinct. That's like, that's very, that's hate and that's like power. Feeling
it's like and dislike.
But
I like you because you belong to
if
my
you really, if you really followed your instinct, you would not go in the wrong way.
You're speaking about following the heart.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. But, you know, then people can understand instinct in various ways. One is going by the heart, going by some very deep feeling.
The instinct is not hate. The kid.
Yeah, that is a different story. That is a different story. But here we are speaking about experiences where that action of discrimination is not based on that feeling of what is right and what is wrong. There is a feeling of what is right and what is wrong, but that is based on this deep identity and the feeling of superiority and inferiority. Where I'm discriminating because I believe I have a better reason to exist in this world than you do. And people who I affiliate to have a better reason to exist in this world than you do. And therefore, I am discriminating. Okay, let us go on. But you wanted to say something.
No, no, that was
no,
actually...
behind you. Sorry.
Well,
you wanted to say...
The reason for that, I would assume it was fear, like to be in advance of someone you consider your...
Yes. Let's go a little deeper into it. We have discussed these things before, but let's go into it a little deeper now. So when we speak about identity, how is this identity shaped? So one, we speak about the construction from our social environment, right? Social constructionism. So as we are growing up, we learn what is right and what is wrong. We learn about how I should be, how I ought to be, how I ought not to be. And a lot of this is because of the immediate environment in which I am growing up, my parents, my caregivers, my family. I grow up, I go to school, so then I'm exposed to many cultural artifacts, cultural expressions. And when I play according to these cultural expressions, I am rewarded, I am accepted, I am protected. So I develop, this is one way of looking at it, of course, I develop a sense of, and then of course there is a part of me that is not allowed expression. So if I express, if I say, for example, in some cultures, boys don't cry, girls do, right? So if I'm a boy and I'm crying, are you a girl? Why are you crying? Not in Denmark, perhaps, but it does happen in many other cultures. By the way, in Scandinavia, people say women and men, you know, they have the highest level of equality. But even in spite of all that, there have been studies, for example, from Sweden, where they televise teachers treating children in schools. Right? They want to see how they are behaving towards their children, towards the children there. And you can clearly see the way they behave to the girls and the way they behave to the boys, there is a difference. There is a difference. And maybe that's okay. But anyway, there is a difference. And through this difference, I'm communicating, now to be a good girl, you have to be like this. To be a good boy, you have to be like this. In some cultures, I say, well, to be a good boy, you have to be like the girl. And to be a good girl, you have to be like the boy. So lesser difference. In some cultures, I'm saying, well, to be a good girl, you have to be different. You have to be softer and gentler and kinder. To be a good boy, you have to be different. You have to be tougher and more assertive and strong. So in different places, I'm communicating different things, depending on the context in which I'm growing up. And if I behave like a good boy according to that culture, I'm accepted, I'm rewarded, I'm... If I'm not, I'm punished. Need not be physical punishment, but I am excluded. I am rejected. Something is communicated to me. That's not the way to be. You have to be in this particular way. And as a child, I'm taking this in. I'm taking this in. And then, and both are parts of myself. What I'm being rewarded is a part of me. What I'm being punished is a part of me. But I'm being rewarded for something. I'm being punished for something. And so, in psychoanalysis, we say, there is a split in our inner experience of the self. It's splitting.
So our experience of who I am is split. And out comes one part and another part, and this is the good me, what I ought to be. This is the bad me, what I ought not to be. And so, we are looking at the experience. So now, if I demonstrate the bad me, I experience. It's not so good, it's not right. I may experience feelings of inferiority. I express and experience the good me, I experience a feeling of superiority, security, worth, whatever it is. Because when I'm expressing the good me, when I'm expressing this good me, this is protected. My self-worth and security is protected. If I'm experiencing, of course, on the other hand, the bad me, this is threatened. And obviously, I wouldn't want to have any experiences that threatens my sense of self, because that stimulates insecurity, that stimulates inferiority. I want to hang on to what I believe is right. I grow up with these experiences. I forget those experiences of being rewarded and punished. I've grown up. I've taken them in within myself. I call them mine. They are me. These are my values. Where did those values come from? Was I born with them? Obviously not. I've taken them in. I have taken them in, I have taken them in, and then they have become a part of what I call I. It is the ego. Very deep level of the ego. A very deep level of personal and social values, cultural values, which I believe are right. Let me give you an example. And how irrational it can make us. It can make us so irrational. Give you an example. I have taught, let's take an example of two countries. Let's take Denmark, let's take India. I've worked in both these countries quite a bit, right? Now, according to one model of cultural frameworks, Indian society is supposed to be a little more collectivist, where people are born together, there are tight social networks, you belong to a group, you express loyalty to the group then protects you. So you have these tight social networks. A lot of countries in the Asian world are like that. Denmark, very high on individualism, you're expected to work on your own, take care of yourself, you know, that's how it goes, generally speaking. When you speak to students in the classroom, in both these places, you can see these dynamics emerging. Now, what is right, collectivism or individualism? What is right? What works better? You say individualism works better?
I say in between.
In between. The reality is both are okay. The reality is both don't stop nations from progressing. Look at Japan and look at Germany. Both the nations were destroyed in the Second World War. Both the nations emerged very strongly after the Second World War, and they became the leaders of the world's economy. Right now, because China has become number two, they are number three and number four. Before China, they were number two and number three. Japan number two, Germany number three, in terms of the size and the power of the economy. Very different ways of working. Japanese culture, very collectivistic. German culture, very individualistic. Very different ways of working, and yet, so actually, even if you look at it in terms of economic development, it doesn't make any difference. Both work. And yet, when you discuss these issues with students, you can see the divisions. You can clearly see the divisions. So, for example, in an Indian classroom, if I'm discussing these things, so what happens in a group of people who are working together? In a collectivistic setting, others are expected to do your job. You can expect them to do your job. You can ask your friend, hey, I have this to do, I want to do my work. And they'll actually do it. Right? In an individualistic setup, it's lesser likely for that to happen. You're expected to do your work. You probably won't even ask others because, you know, it's your work. You will do it yourself. Now, people from this setting will say, no, this is good. This is how it should be. I mean, we should take care of our own work. People from this setting, what is wrong with that? He's my friend. Why can't I do my work? What's wrong with that? And at the end of the day, how does it matter? Both the work is getting done. They're just doing it in different ways, but they're getting it done. But yet, because from my childhood I have been rewarded for that, I believe that is right, the other is wrong, this is right, this is how it should be, it becomes a very strong part of my identity. Why? Not because I've been born with it, because I've been rewarded for it. Because I have experienced security because of that. Because I have been accepted by my groups because of that.
And so I develop. So ego fundamentally emerges from the insecurity. Ego, we believe, creates a security. So my identity, I believe, is creating a security for me. You see these divisions, very, very clear divisions. Sometimes it can be irrational, very, very irrational. I remember, 2 years ago, in India again, this happened. There was some problem in one part of the country. And so the minister, the chief minister of that region, he was implicated. There were some communal riots between Hindus and Muslims. And so he was implicated because apparently he did not take enough the action at the right time, he did not give orders to the police, whatever. There were lots of controversies. So he was planning to travel to the United States during this time. The United States government gave in to the pressure of lobby groups in the US who said, no, this politician has not done enough for the people of the state. So the local population, Muslim population in the US, they pressured the government, you cannot give him a visa because, you know, he has been probably he's been implicated in these issues. So he was not given the visa. His visa application was rejected. Now an Indian politician, a member of the state, with an official position in the country, is rejected. The visa is rejected by another country. So then what happens is, many other Indian politicians who were criticizing him before, who were calling him the devil, Satan, in Indian words, they don't call him Satan, they say Ravan. So, Satan, they all of a sudden started defending him. How did this happen? The United States has rejected the visa application of one of us. How did this happen? And so, some journalists can be very clever sometimes, not always. They can be very clever. So, one journalist, they had a press conference and an interview, and the journalist came and spoke to him. And he said, you know, one of these politicians who was earlier criticizing him, but now was supporting him, but you know, earlier you were saying that he was Satan, the worst person on earth, and all of a sudden now you're supporting him. Why is that? And this guy very clearly says, yes, he may be a Satan, but he's our Satan. what do you do with that thinking? He may be a Satan, but he's our Satan, and therefore we have to protect him. See? Irrational. And it creates so many problems for the country in international relations. It's happened in Denmark recently. This guy in Denmark who went and dumped weapons in one part of India to support some terror organization. So now the Indian government wants this guy to be extradited to India for a jury. Anyway, there are many reasons for that, justified reasons why the Danish government wanted that to happen, but the Danish court stopped it. Because they said, well, India doesn't have very good human rights records, and therefore, whatever. There are other reasons, political reasons. But I was going over the net, and I found some very interesting comments. So some people, they write very clearly, my Danish has become a little better, so I can understand a little nowadays. And even if I can't, there is Google Translate. I can use that a little bit. And so some people saying very clearly, a Dane cannot be extradited to another country, no matter what. I said, okay. What do you mean? No matter what. Doesn't matter what the person has done. Cannot be because he's a Dane. You see? Very clear division. It doesn't matter if we've gone and done something in a country. No, you cannot extradite because he's us. One of us. And this creates problems. In the society, when you have these feelings growing up, it creates problems for the country in international relations, in relations within the country, between different communities, it creates problems. So, we see this division between the good and the me. If you go back to the childhood, it begins from there. And then as we are growing up, it gets complicated because we are reinforced. Some behaviors are reinforced, we hold on to that. And we believe this is what is right. And so, when I'm expressing superiority, it is basically, I'm basically trying to defend my self-worth and my inner security by expressing that in this particular way. Because if I allow this to come out, I don't feel so good. My self-worth and security is threatened, and therefore I reject this. And the complicated part is, this bad me that I don't want to accept, we know, right? You push something out of awareness, that comes out, that bounces out. So, as I frequently keep giving you the example, you take an empty container, turn it upside down, push it down in a bucket full of water, and leave it. it will jump out and fall somewhere outside, right? You turn it around, put it in the water, it will sink in. It will stay there. You turn it around, push it down, it will jump out. There's something inside me that I don't want to accept. I push it out of awareness, and I keep it pushed out of awareness. It cannot stay there because the energy is too much. It will jump out and pop out. How does it pop out? It pops out and lands on other people. So the bad me jumps out, pops out, and lands itself on him. Now who's bad? The mechanism of projection. We spoke about it in the previous session. One is projection, one is projective identification. It pops out on him, that's not enough. Then I make him behave in those ways which will prove to me that he is bad. So I will create systems and traditions and various things to make him behave in a way that he will behave badly, and I can prove to myself he's bad, he's evil, I'm okay. And in society sometimes you see these mechanisms taking place. You know, the thing is, when a society is homogeneous, maybe for some time we can live with this illusion that, oh, I am good, our society is great, we are fantastic, we are the best people in the world, our religion is the best, our country is the best, our language is the best, our culture is the best. We can live with that. The problem is when we come into interaction with others. Because when we come into interaction with others, we see another identity. We see another experience of the good me and the bad me. And that experience of the good me and the bad me could be very different from my experience of the good me and the bad me. In fact, what I consider to be good is bad for them. What I consider to be bad is actually good for them. And so when cultures mix with each other, you can see these dynamics, especially when foreigners come into a country. Another country, for example, with diasporas who've been living, foreign cultures living in another country for a long time. You see that, or one nation going into another country for various reasons, you see these divisions becoming more and more complicated. And then you find some very interesting reactions. For example, when we study diasporas, diasporas are, say, people belonging to a particular nation who've moved out and then they've been living in another nation. So you see these dynamics. So now what happens, especially with children of, say, people, immigrants who've come into another country, especially with children. Now, these children are being brought up in at home with a slightly different understanding of what is good and what is not good. So they're coming up with one understanding of the good me and one understanding of the bad me. To go outside, they have a different understanding of the good me and the bad me. They are being rewarded for something else. At home, they are being rewarded for something else. Outside, they are being rewarded for something else. At home, they are being punished for something else. Outside, they are being punished for something else. And that can sometimes lead to a very complicated identity, which is fractured, fragmented. And that's not comfortable. We want to have one unified, secure sense of self. And so what happens? You observe various reactions. One reaction is a total rejection of the home identity. And you become digested into the new culture. But that doesn't really happen that easily. Because deep below at the level, in the deep levels of the unconscious, those experiences are there. The way my mother loved me for being a certain way, the way my father rewarded me for being a certain way, those experiences of love and peace and security are there inside me, they are there in my mind. But superficial experiences, other experiences are challenging that. So I push it out of my awareness, but that creates a lot of difficulty for me. The other option, I reject the foreign culture, go back to my home culture. This is who I am. Fundamentalism, fanaticism. And so you close down. You mix only with people in your community. You stay with people in your community. And you stick to that. Isolation. One is digestion, getting digested by the other and rejecting the other. You're only rejecting a part of yourself. So what you're doing is you're creating a bad me. You're pushing it out. So now my home culture is bad. I don't want to be a part of that. Push it out. But that's a part of me. The other is, no, my home culture is good, the foreign culture is bad, I stick to this. But this is also a part of me because I've grown up in this place. And both create difficulties for people.
And then, of course, some people try and integrate, where they try and understand what is really happening there and how can I be a productive and integrated member of the society, holding on to my background at the same time integrating things that I'm learning in this place. But that requires a lot of reflection, a lot of understanding. This is from the immigrant populations. From the home populations, again, when you study all across the world, home populations. So these foreigners have come into my country. Right? I'm the host. These foreigners have come to my country. The same dynamic is happening. Because I have grown up in this country, I have grown up with certain values, I have my understanding of the good and the bad. These people come in, they behave very strangely. Look at the way they dress. Oh, very strange. Look at the way they talk. Extremely strange. I can't understand a word of what they say anyway. Many, 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 many things. They are different. And they seem to be happy. Oh. How can people be happy like that? No. That cannot be true. It's wrong. I don't believe in that. That's not happiness. That's just a show. We come to all sorts of assumptions because that is challenging our identity. There is a different way of being. And there is a different way of being that has love, that has peace. They have a family, they love each other, but they just do it in a very different way. That threatens my understanding of what is right and what is wrong. And therefore, if I interact with them very closely, I am threatened. The boundaries of my identity are threatened. Stay away. Exclusion. So I will not go to beaches where they come. Where they, because it is they. Oh, we are all the same. Fine, you're different, I'm different. But I'd rather not go to the beach where you come because this will shake. The boundaries are threatened. And so in different ways, people practice exclusion. And that doesn't really help. It doesn't help the immigrants. It doesn't help the host population. Because the divisions become deeper. They become lesser and lesser integrated. And then develops hatred. You spoke of hatred. Where does it come from? Because we haven't. The hatred is coming from the fear. The fear is coming from the insecurity. The insecurity is coming from my identity, which I believe can exist only in this way. The others are challenging that, push them away. And therefore, there is hatred, there is a reaction from both sides. There is a problem. Now, what do we do? There is. You spoke about this whole understanding of the soul, right? So what is happening at that level? Is this the only thing that is contributing to our understanding of the good me and the bad me? From a spiritual perspective, we say no. However deep it is still a very superficial layer. Psychology, anthropology, sociology, they go to this level. And they try and figure out things at this level. From a spiritual perspective, we understand that the good me and the bad me is far deeper than this. Far deeper than this. And that goes to our experience of our spiritual self, which we speak about as the soul. We understand that this also creates a sense of self-worth and security. This is also related to our identity. And when I, for example, go against, so when we speak about going against the values of my social self, going against my cultural values creates a threat. Going against my personal values creates a threat. Going against my spiritual values creates the greatest threat. And so we say this splitting is happening before this level. This splitting is happening at this level. And so here too, there is the good me, and there is the bad me. The good me is that which has lived by these spiritual values. And the bad me is that which has gone against those spiritual values. And spiritually, because this experience is perhaps the deepest layer of consciousness, we cannot always access it. We can access the cultural experience. Even they are difficult to access because many of those are lost in our childhood. It's difficult to remember very clearly what happened in our childhood. But the spiritual experience and the spiritual trauma and the spiritual split is far deeper. It's far deeper. That is the fall of Adam and Eve.
That was the biting of the apple from the tree. That was the luring of Satan, captured in myth, captured in stories, because we can't really experience it consciously. And so from the deep unconscious, I want to express it, I want to express it. How do I express it? I create the story of the fall of Adam and Eve. And in that story, it resonates with something within me. Something within me. But I can't feel that something because it is so painful. It is so painful to feel it within me. I can't feel it. So I create a story. I feel satisfied listening to the story. Oh, Adam and Eve lived. Adam and Eve were created by God. They were given the Garden of Eden to live in. And there was Satan within me. No, there was Satan within me. No, no, no. Satan cannot exist within me. There was Satan. And Satan lured Eve. Women are lured, by the way. Men are not lured, is it? Satan lures Eve, apple. And we like these stories. It's so nice. Because those stories provide an anxiety defense to the ego. I see these stories. The problem is out there. The problem actually is in here. Because that split, that fall of Adam and Eve has happened in here, in the depths of my soul, when I moved away from my integrity, when I moved away from my spirituality, when I moved away from that vision of equality that is the natural nature of the soul, when I committed the sin. People don't like the word sin. But what is sin? Going against my integrity, going against my values, that purity. I lost my purity. That is the first split. And because I split at the level of the deep experience of the spiritual self, I lose my purity. I fall from grace. I fall out of the kingdom of heaven, the state of mind that I was. I fall out of that. Then I have to compensate for that loss. I've lost my purity. How do I compensate for that? In extreme situations, cleanse the nation of the foreigner. What is happening? It is my loss of purity. Deep inside, I've lost my purity. I don't know how to regain it. What I know is, I project that purity into my race. My race is the best, most pure, perfect race. All the others are inferior. They are impure. Cleanse them. I feel good about myself. That can never. And so the discrimination that we experience in the world outside, at one level, it is because of the split at the level of the ego identity. But this we can deal with. The deeper level is the split at the level of the spiritual self, which I am unable to experience because it is so very painful. Even this is painful. Confronting the bad me and the good me, the way I have been punished for certain experiences, this is also painful. People struggle with this in therapy for so many years. Going into this, you can't even access it in therapy. You can't even access that in therapy. And therefore the utility of meditation, because it is only under the light of God that you will get the strength to access that deep split in the soul and confront the trauma of the fall from grace. The fall of Adam and Eve, confront that trauma, because only He can give us that power, that light that will heal the soul, that will give the soul the strength to face that deep, deep trauma. And unless and until I heal that trauma, the superficial stuff will keep happening. Nothing will change. I will keep trying to compensate for this loss in this way. Try to create purity, cleanse people, move everybody else away from the world so I can, my nation, my race. I lose my power, try to gain power in the world. And then different cultures have different ways of explaining how power should be gained and controlled, and so many differences. And that creates further difficulties within me. And especially in this globalizing world, I come up with one understanding, go to another place with another understanding. It's so much of confusion. Doesn't seem to be one clear answer. There are so many systems, so many politics. There is so many isms, as they say. Which ism do I follow? Every ism seems to fail. Because every ism, which is a creation of the human self, right? Every ism will be as perfect as the human self is. Alan Greenspan. You know Alan Greenspan? He was the chairman of the Federal Reserve in America for around 20 years. A confirmed diligent devotee of capitalism. Ayn Rand and capitalism. Right? Many of his policies were guided by his deep belief in the goodness of capitalism and the badness of communism, for example. Right? I grew up with that understanding. So, does many things. In 2006, he retires. A couple of years after that, there is a huge recession. And many of the policies that Alan Greenspan had actually started were blamed for the eventual fall of the American economy because he protected the Wall Street. Many, many things like that. So, he has been, poor fellow. I don't want to blame him myself. I mean, he just did things. And many other people who were doing many things. One of the 25 people in the world to blame for the recession. As though that person is existing in a vacuum. We create the situation, right, for him to play out his role. But very interestingly, very humble person, very intelligent, very deep. In many committee hearings, he says, it is painful for me to discover that I was actually wrong. He says that. I believed that the companies will protect the shareholders. But there are many other interests that are happening, right? It doesn't really work. Any ism we create is as good as the people who are running it. Communism, great ideal, classless society, equality. What happens? People come into power because of the emptiness in the soul, created by the split in the soul. I try to compensate. So I have the good intentions because I know I want to do something good for the world, but I am captured by this evil within me, the bad me, at various levels, and I end up creating systems of discrimination and systems of exclusion in the world, and then I end up creating, not really achieving what I want to achieve. Capitalism, meritocracy, right? They say. Those who have merit. I want to create a system, but then it's as good as the people. So Greenspan thought, these guys who I'm giving so much of freedom to, they will have the ethical and moral responsibility and protect their shareholders. They were not concerned. Because they were too busy filling up their emptiness of the soul. And so eventually the system begins to have problems. Whatever system you create, democracy, whatever system you create, people will find a way to beat the system. Why? Because they are controlled by this evil within them that they themselves are unable to see. And they will keep trying to find a compensation for the bad me. Always find a compensation for the bad me. And when you're trying to find a compensation, you don't care. You want to assert yourself. You want to protect your boundaries, make yourself secure. Others get compromised. Others get sacrificed. That's okay. I don't want to do it, but I'm controlled by these unconscious trauma and the unconscious split. And therefore, as far as I understand at least, without going to that depth in the soul, if you want to solve the problems of this world, it is not possible. I will do something, I will fail. I will do something more, I will fail. Because I am being controlled by the evil within me. I don't even know there is evil within me. Any questions? Yes.
Well, conclusion.
Say?
Conclusion of this one.
Conclusion?
Yeah.
You're asking me?
No, I'm asking myself.
Okay.
That's a big question.
Okay.
Because we discuss all of those things about we're going back or the base of our childhood, identity, all of those things. And
yeah.
In the end, we come back to the spirituality and religion and all of those.
Yeah.
And it has been for ages.
Yeah.
Since the human being started actually to think.
Hmm.
But still we have all of those problems.
You're right.
And
can I give you an answer to that?
Yes.
The problem is, religion, spirituality, instead of working at this level, it becomes a part of my ego identity. It loses its spiritual value. It becomes a part of belonging. I am a Muslim. I am a Christian. It loses the whole thing. So the very purpose for which it was created is defeated because I make it an ego. I am rewarded for being a Muslim, I am rewarded for being a Christian, or I am not rewarded, whatever it is, various experiences, I latch that on. And I follow that religion, I still don't really understand what has happened in the depths of the soul, I don't know that. And so any system, even religion, will fail because it's working at this level. In Raj Yoga, in the philosophy of Raj Yoga, we try and create a system that goes beyond religion. But again, it's very tricky.
I can say, I belong to the Brahma Kumaris, I practice Rajyoga. I can make that a part of my ego, in which case I will fail. I will again fail. I will then use that identity to try and fill up the emptiness inside me. That will never happen. Then I will discriminate against people who are practicing other systems of meditation. And then it can go a few steps further. It can even result in violence, ultimately. So the whole point is transcending identity, all forms of identity, because ultimately, any form of identity is self-defeating because it is based on insecurity.
And maybe I can add a misjudgment. That's the biggest problem right now we have.
Yeah.
And before you know something, you get a knowledge from it, and then you judge it, and then coming back to doubt.
Yes.
And we have seen it in the whole world. I mean, much more.
You're right. And therefore, we say, unless and until we have this practice of going deep within ourselves and looking at ourselves and connecting to God, not as, you know, the God of my religion, but the God of humanity, that Father of the whole of humanity, connecting to Him or her, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter, He is God. Connecting in that experience and generating this experience of being a soul. Doesn't matter where you come from. You are my brother. You are my sister. I am a soul. We are the children of one God. Not saying it. Feeling it. Feeling it in the depth of my being. Because when I start feeling that, I get in touch with my spiritual self. And this trauma that I have created by splitting up begins to then heal. And that's the only way. And then systems are created automatically, which are not discriminatory. Yes.
So maybe we should start to teach this in schools all over the world.
That would be wonderful if you can do that.
Yeah,
thank you so much. I would also like to do that. If schools allow me, right now, whenever you speak about God, people say, hmm. But you're right, it would be wonderful if that can be done. That's the purpose of this spiritual movement. Because the understanding that we have in Rajyoga is very clear. Unless and until the deep trauma of the soul is healed, the world cannot be healed. Okay, we quickly and then we will wind up for today's.
So the trauma of the soul, if you want to heal that, then there is no bad part of the soul originally? Is it only good?
The understanding is the soul itself is neutral. It's energy. But the neutrality is maintained by certain values, which are the nature of the soul. Like, for example, peace and love. Nature of the soul. So you can call it good, but in reality it is neutral. That is the nature of the soul. When I go against that neutrality, then I create evil, the bad me. So you can call it good, because it doesn't create any harm, it is good. But the reality is it is neutral. But neutrality is good, if you can call it that, because it doesn't create harm for the self or for the others. Yeah, but that's the understanding that we have. Yes.
Does it mean that it all simply happened over time? That you forgot your real identity?
That's the understanding. That's the understanding. It happens over time because in Rajyoga, you know, we speak about the soul as eternal energy. So you continue to exist after this body, before this body. So we carry experiences of various lifetimes within us. That's the understanding. So this happens over a period of time. Those of you who are interested can take the Rajyoga course, where we go into the history of the soul also and try and understand how this shift and this fall actually happens. But today we don't have the time for that. You wanted to say something, is it? Someone? No? Okay. Okay, finally, to conclude.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Yes.
I was thinking about some sentence from the Dalai Lama. He said, when we are judging, whatever is that, is starting with wellness and the person, if you just look at it, well, there's cultural things. And in the end, is a human being and humanity.
Yeah.
It should be the first. Yeah. Actually, if we look at it, and then we get the better, maybe life or contact of
life. Going to the level of humanity, which is the level of the spiritual self, at which level we can actually connect with each other. Okay, thank you very much. We will have a little meditation before we wind up.
I let the body relax completely, letting go of any tension that may have accumulated in the body. And in this relaxed state, I turn my attention away from this external world, going deep within myself. I withdraw myself from all experiences of the ego. I withdraw myself from all that I usually call I. My social affiliations, culture, language, religion, country, race. I withdraw myself from my own achievements, history, experiences. From my own skills, abilities, competencies. I withdraw myself from all that I normally call I. And I experience my entire existence merging, converging, concentrating into a point of light. The soul, the spirit, that eternal, indestructible part that is the true I. For everything else is temporary, passing, finite. I see myself as this sparkling star. In the center of the brain, this body my costume, and I the master of this costume. Stabilized in this experience, so be the eternal spirit. I go beyond all limits of this physical world, beyond this body, beyond the earth, beyond the moon, the sun, and the stars. I go beyond space and time till I see myself in that world of light that is the eternal home of the soul. and I see myself in the presence of God. The Supreme Healer. The unlimited ocean. The supreme parent of all souls. Incorporeal. The source of infinite life. The source of infinite peace. I place myself under his healing light. I see him as a sparkling star of conscient energy. His light falling upon me. Healing the split inside the soul. Making the soul whole once again. Returning the soul to its original stage of peace. Fullness. Integrity. I allow myself to feel the unconditional love that heals the soul. Supreme love that regenerates the feeling of self-worth deep existential security I the soul presence of God. Two sparkling stars of conscient energy. Silent and peaceful. I feel one with myself and one with the whole of humanity, my family. My family. And I rest in deep silence. absorbing the light of the Supreme. I allow myself to gently return back to this room, back to this body, this costume of mine. And once again I take my place in the center of the brain. I, the eternal spirit, the point of light, the being of peace. Peace, my original nature. Peace, my only religion. Oh, okay, tak for you, Dick.